Blog Talk Radio.
This is my daddy on the Saturday flight from the Tower of Power, the very top story in my wavy gravy groovy gravy rocket laboratory, where we're bending every effort and making every test to be sure that our records are always the best. You see, well, before we play them on this crazy wavy air, we dip them in this smoking vat with extra special care, wearing thick big rubber gloves and using special tongs. We make the Mad Dad acid test on the up-and-coming songs.
Well, not exactly songs. Thank you, Mad Daddy Pete Myers. Good evening. Welcome to Eerie House Radio. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show. I'm here with
Dave Binkley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. And Dale, I have not one, not two, but 12 sun facts, day facts to go with our topic tonight.
Yeah, it is that time of the year. We're seeing a little bit more of that object in the sky. That is old Sol, or Sol, the sun. And that's what our radio programs are about tonight.
Yeah, bringing back a new favorite, Alien Worlds, and of course an old favorite of Lights Out, Everybody.
That's tonight. And it's a nice long episode of Alien Worlds, a four-parter,
yeah,
gang.
Yeah, it's 2 half-hour programs, which, of course, we have into two parts each part, which is 4 parts. And don't ask me to do any more math tonight.
Yeah, they said there wouldn't be any math, but there is. There's always math. It's around you.
It is all around you.
Can't help into it. Your flesh and eat your brain. But that's okay. We got lots of it. No, well, not brain,
lots of
but
brain?
Math. No, lots of
okay.
Which is why we don't have lots of brain. But I digress. It's all about the sci-fi this weekend. Yes, indeedy.
Yeah, because interesting time, and I didn't know at first that I'd be able to get enough for a whole weekend of sun, of which we don't have here in Ohio right now. But hey, what the
heck?
Not
today.
Right?
Yeah. Not today, but Sunday. They say we might get a little bit of that sun, maybe.
Yeah, that's what they're saying.
This time of year, you can get all 4 seasons.
That's true. Yeah, you can get spring. You can get fake spring. You can get winter. You can get the occasionally a little bit of summer.
Yeah, yep. It's all multi-purpose season in Ohio.
It's called Welcome to Ohio. Yep.
Yes, indeed. Well, that's what they say in the southern part. Up here we speaks differently and stuff.
And stuff, yes, yes.
And stuff.
We are much more articulate in how we present ourselves.
Sad to say that Gar the Ghoul will not be with us tonight, not feeling well again. Gotta get well, brother. Gotta get well. I
please,
know you've been catching
please.
Reruns on Saturday nights after our show of Gar the Ghoul's Horrible Horror, and we'll see what happens. Just keep it tuned, because you'll never know when he'll come roaring back.
Yep, I did talk to him earlier this week, and he's still hurting.
Yep. So our good wishes, prayers, and otherwise good vibes out to Gar the Ghoul.
Yes. Yes, but boy, do we have an interesting program with Alien Worlds, returning to Alien Worlds, Dale. Good program on the West Coast from the 1970s. Again, as you have so aptly termed it, it really was the Silver Age of radio, because the 40s into maybe the early 50s, but mostly the 40s, was technically the golden age of radio. And the 70s is when I think people were looking for nostalgia and looking for a chance to get back. And it started with all these several programs syndicating themselves out, like Halls of Fantasy and The Great Gildersleeve. And then you had the Elliot Lewis bringing back The Zero Hour with Rod Serling. And after that, Sears Radio Theater, of course, E.G. Marshall bringing the CBS Radio Mystery Theater. So it really was a rebirth of radio drama. And we'll never see that in, we'll see it on the internet, but we'll never really see it on regular radio anymore, just because it costs are so, even if that doesn't, usually it's put together by groups that really aren't even looking for money, but everything is so automated at radio stations. Yeah, well, but everything is so automated at radio stations that sometimes there are some stations don't even have any real bodies there anymore.
Yeah.
They're not having bots taking over radio shifts and stuff, doing the announcing and everything.
Did we learn nothing from the Terminator? Did we learn nothing?
We didn't.
Watch for Skynet, gang. It's coming. It's coming down the pike. But you'll always have us. Even if we have to be a pirate radio station somewhere, we'll be playing the old-time radio programs.
The only problem with being a pirate radio station is, boy, it's so hard to keep that pirate voice up for very long, you know?
Matey. It's a little hard on the throat.
Yep, it is.
Try being Popeye for an hour. That's not easy on the throat either, I'll tell you.
I would believe not, yeah. And, of course, we have... he was in there. He's gone again. What? Oh, he's listening mobile tonight. Fogsbane is listening mobile tonight. And of course we have good old Bob and the GG Spy Papers listening in live. And,
also in the
Dale
chat.
Says that,
yeah.
And all those that can't, we can't see. And all of those who are listening to us in the archive who just, I know the reason they aren't here live, Dale, is just they want to hear all the extra bonus material at the end of the show.
Yeah, we'll always have bonus material when needed. We don't want to keep you listening to us jabbering too long. But
a whole lot of radio.
Why don't we begin with, you've whetted our appetites. Why don't we begin with Alien Worlds?
Absolutely. This part one is of the first part of the episode, and it comes to us from January 7th. Of 1979.
The Sun Stealers.
Within the far reaches of deep space, there remain unknown planets, journeys into galaxies yet uncharted. Stellar exploration is the newfound adventure. High above Earth's windy skies, 1,000 miles in space, a large wheeling disk lazily drifts in orbit. A space station whose official designation is the Arthur C. Clarke Astronomical Observatory. To those living and working aboard, it is simply called Starlab. Their lives and adventures become our story on the threshold of Alien Worlds.
Stand by, Mission Control. We have a red code report from Level C Radio Telescope.
Roger, Starlab Control. Go ahead. Starlab Control, this is the Spectral Analysis Officer, Level C. Our radio telescope interferometry has detected unusual sunspot activity at a bearing of 409er.
Thanks, Bill. Keep us posted. What's going on, Jerry? I'm not sure, Tim, but we're going to find out.
Starlab Control, this is Telescope 4, Level D. We're tracking with Level C.
Yeah, Ken.
Solar graphs show high-density activity.
All right, Level D. Print through the data on the ICM recorder, please.
Right, Control. It's online.
Look at this.
What?
That minutes more solar activity in the last 2 minutes than we've seen in 2 years. I'd better call Dr. Cassidy.
Meanwhile, on Earth, the effect of the sun's strange activity begins. Kansas City, Missouri, 8:05 p.m.
Good evening, Mr. Jennings. Good to see you again. Well, thanks, Ron. Now, would the two of you care for a bottle of wine?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea.
Great.
The usual, Ron.
All right.
Well, I'm certain you'll love the food here, Sylvia. It's a very special place. It's been a favorite spot of mine for years.
Mm.
I've known the owner a long time, too.
What's that?
Huh. That's strange. Probably just a heavy truck going by in the street outside.
My God! Slaughter!
Temperatures worldwide are dropping. Anchorage, Alaska reports...
Earthquakes, tidal waves, and temperature shifts around the globe slowly intensify. A solar mystery unfolds, and back on Starlab, the disorder becomes even more apparent. 2130 hours.
The Starlab Control, this is Scope 4, Level D. We've just tracked a third major flare-out on the sun's Earth side.
Level D, begin all radio telescope recorders. Feed us an audio scan. Plug in the Mycroft computers.
Roger. Mycroft on. Log on scanners.
Hi, Dr. Cassidy. Thanks for coming up here. I knew you'd want to know.
All right, Tim. Now, what's going on?
The three of our main telescopes are tracking the sun.
Yes, and?
Analysis indicates an incredible amount of solar flaring and abnormal sunspot activity.
Earth stations are reporting earthquakes, tidal waves, and various other abnormalities.
We've begun tracking confirmation through our Mycroft Computer Center.
Okay, Tim.
This is Spectral Analysis Level C. We have a priority report.
This is Control Level C. Go ahead.
Jerry, I can't believe what we're seeing up here.
What is it?
It looks like we may be headed for a singularity condition on the sun.
Singularity? You mean the sun's going out? Bill, are you sure? Listen, we'll send Tim up there right now. We'll need all your current graphs and radiation scan reports.
Okay, Jerry.
And Bill, you'd better set up radar solar tracking operations, too.
Right, Dr. Cassidy.
Tim, you'd better get up there now. Get all the graphs and Mycroft readings.
Okay, Dr. Cassidy.
I'm not looking forward to telling the ISA the sun is going dead.
Knowledge concerning energy had become an important property to man. But the idea of the sun going out prematurely represents a new and very unusual situation for Dr. Cassidy and Starlab's research people. The beginning of a dark nightmare in the light of alien worlds. Alien Worlds continues. To those aboard Starlab, a shiny rotating observatory high above Earth, the sun seemed to be going dead. Radio telescopes reveal a once fiery sun darkening. Research Director Mara Cassidy contacts the International Space Authority.
This is the ISA, Dr. Cassidy. Are you there?
Yes, Commissioner.
We've had a 20-degree temperature shift in the last hour in the Sahara, Ma. Satellite charts show glacier movement at the poles. It looks like an eclipse. What the hell's going on up there?
We don't know exactly what's happening yet, but our Mycroft computer terminal shows readings that indicate the sun is losing electromagnetic energy at a rate greater than normal. We may be headed for a gravitational collapse.
Pardon me, Dr. Cassidy. The mass proximity indicator is registering...
Not now, Tim. I've got...
Dr. Cassidy, are you setting up solar radiation scanning?
What? Solar scanning? Oh, yes, we're working on it, sir. Tim, have communications patch Mycroft through to the ISA computers.
Right.
Commissioner White, I'm having our computer tech supply your office with a duplicate of our current information tapes. You'll have everything we've got shortly.
Yes, Doctor. My terminal is receiving it now. destroyed? It can't be.
I'm afraid so, Commissioner White. We've got about 60 hours before the sun reaches singularity and Earth freezes solid.
What can we do to help?
Well, first of all, we need you to send an SET up here right away. We need to make a house call.
Well, the only space exploration team I've got for immediate alerts that can handle this is Delta One.
Delta One? Oh, wait a minute. That's Graydon, right? Captain John Graydon?
And Buddy Griff. That's right, Ma.
Oh, no, Commissioner. Isn't there anyone else you could send us?
I'm sorry, Doctor. That's the team. We'll launch immediately. Their ETA is 3 hours, 10 minutes. Keep us informed, Ma. Out.
Yes, sir. We'll keep you informed. Out.
Dr. Cassidy, what's wrong?
I can't believe they're sending Buddy Griff up here. They might as well let the damn sun go out.
Delta One, SET Command. Report to ISA pre-launch immediately.
What? Oh, we just got in. Boy, you can't get a spare minute anywhere anymore. Oh, come on, Captain. Let's just finish this hand, huh?
Oh, we better pass for now, buddy. We better get down there.
Pass? The man's 18 in back of me. I got a hot 21, and he says pass.
It's just a game. We can pick it up later.
It's just a game. I'll say it's just a game. All right. All right. ISA says jump, and Captain John Graydon jumps. That's how come you're a bloody hero, and I'm just a lover.
And that's the story of your life, right, buddy?
Dr. Cassidy, I just got back from spectral analysis. The mass proximity indicators are registering some kind of solid object near the sun. It's like a planetoid.
Oh, Tim, don't be silly. The MPI is probably reading solar flare-off gas.
But I think there's something there.
Don't worry about it, Tim. Besides, the problem right now is the SET crew they're sending us.
I don't understand. Isn't that the next logical step?
Logical step, yes. Logical team, no. Especially with Buddy Griff.
Buddy Griff?
Captain John Graydon's co-pilot. The Prince of Pomposity.
John Graydon. I met him just after he got back from Altair. He's a great pilot. I remember a lecture he gave our academy class in 2010.
It's not John who worries me. It's Griff. During the Altair mission, my father was with them. Buddy made a very bad judgment error with a photon laser. It caused my father's death.
Oh, Doctor, I'm sorry. I had no idea.
Yes. Well, never mind. I'll deal with that later. Well, let's get up to spectral analysis and take a look at this planetoid of yours.
I'm really worried about this, Doctor. I have a theory that this object is affecting the sun. Now, don't ask me how the devil it got there.
Tim, pull yourself together.
Hi, fellas. Graydon.
Commissioner White.
Griff.
Hey, que pasa, Chief?
Listen, men, we've got problems with the sun. Heavy solar activity that needs some first-hand observation. You'll be briefed on Starlab by Dr. Cassidy.
Starlab, huh?
That's right. They're expecting you right away. You'd better get over to launch control now.
Wait, have I got time to get some cigarettes?
Come on, buddy. Let's go.
Lock tanking secured.
Box tanking, Delta One, you are cleared for launch. 2030 Zulu. Your trajectory is 010 degrees.
Market control, 010 degrees.
Give my regards to Earth Control. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Liftoff. All systems go.
Oh, man, I just love a good rocket ride.
ISA Launch Control reports Delta One liftoff, Dr. Cassidy. Their ETA is a little less than 2 hours.
All right, Tim. Keep me informed.
Yes, Doctor. There's more data coming in on the mass proximity indicator.
What do you mean?
Instruments show a planet-sized mass does exist. It's roughly on the same plane of the ecliptic, someplace inside the orbit of Venus.
A planet? in the orbit of Venus? You're crazy, Tim.
I realize it sounds bizarre.
Look, Tim, we both checked the radio telescope reports from spectral analysis. There were no visible signs of any planetoid. Well, there must be something wrong with the MPI. Have the technicians compu-scan the circuits.
But, Dr. Cassidy...
And when Delta-1 docs, bring them to my office.
Yes, Doctor.
As the sun's unusual activity continues, Starlab researchers work around the clock to unlock the mystery. Tim has found a clue, which Dr. Cassidy believes to be a fluke. Computer error? Maybe. But what Tim may have found could be the first sign of alien worlds.
And we're going to find out in just a little bit if he has.
Yes, we will. Interesting thing about the alien worlds here, Dale. Of course, it began developing in the fall of 78. Here, this was January 7th of 79. This was the first episode or the first two episodes for one story. And it was unique that it eventually was aired on over 500 FM radio stations here in the U.S., along with stations in New Zealand and Australia.
Lying.
And eventually, it was carried over 1,500 top-rated FM radio stations worldwide.
Ooh.
And that's probably why I didn't find it, because I wasn't listening to I listened to some MMS, but I don't think I really listened to any other FM at that time. And if it was here in Cleveland, it wasn't on the station that I was tuned into.
Oh, that'll teach you to listen to the right station.
I can't imagine with 500 U.S. stations, there wasn't one Cleveland station that aired it.
Yeah, it would seem with that much, you'd get something, you know?
Yeah.
Out here. We're not that far out in the sticks.
No. Because we did air the Sears and Mutual Theater, and we also aired the Mystery Theater. So, you know, a Zero Hour was another one that fell off the map. But again, that one, because I think that one was in stereo, so it really wouldn't fit in with AM at the time. And so I didn't really know about that one either until later. So it's just a unique thing, yeah.
Well, and it's fun to keep learning the new stuff as it's discovered.
Yeah, I discovered this basically as a junior in high school. They had cassettes of it at the public library.
Aha.
Now available several places on the internet, including the Internet Archive. And their website is no longer available. So, however, they are actually working on, at least according to this list, they are working on a 3D, so a CGI version for
Ooh.
Television and video. So we'll see how that works out.
That could be an interesting notion there. Let's see what they can pull off.
Yep.
This is a
yep.
pretty exciting Very story. Good. I mean, we've got some adventure for sure coming.
Oh, yeah, exactly. It's just we haven't even met the alien world yet, but that's coming, I think, in part two here of the part four of our four-part episode tonight.
Yep. And let's go ahead and move on to part two of Alien Worlds, the Sun Stealers, right here on Erie House Radio.
Alien Worlds continues. Strange solar activity threatens the survival of Earth. A solar exploration team is sent to investigate. Under the direction of Dr. Mara Cassidy at Starlab, a space observatory. There is little time.
Dr. Cassidy?
Yes, Tim.
Delta One reporting, Captains Graydon and Griff.
Thank you, Tim. Come in, gentlemen.
Hello, Dr. Cassidy. Good to see you again.
Hello, Captain Graydon. Griff.
Hiya, Doc.
Hey, where's the hero's welcome? No band, no parade, no hats and horns. I thought this was a big deal.
Like the big deal with my father, right?
Oh, look, lady, there were problems for all of us on Altair. What happened with your father could have involved anybody. It just happened to be me.
That's right, buddy. It just happened to be you.
All right, you two, enough of this. We've got work to do. Can you tell us why we're here, Doctor?
Well, you've observed the unusual solar activity during the past few hours.
Yes, of course. We were wondering if there are any solar collecting activities that could be causing this.
No, we've checked that. There's something going on with the sun itself. That's why we need you, to take pictures and run solar tests close up, before it goes dead.
Dead? The sun? Oh, Doc, you've been out without a spacesuit too long. That's impossible.
No, I'm afraid it's not impossible, buddy. Watch the computer terminal. Tim?
Right.
That's frightening. Wow. What's our bottom line?
I want you to get as close as you can.
We'll have you patched into the Mycroft computer.
We can then direct you from that point as to what to do next.
Well, just what I need to end up as barbecued spaceman.
We better get rolling.
Right. Tim, take Captains Graydon and Griff down to mission control.
All right.
Good luck, you two.
We'll get the story for you, Maura.
Yeah, and if you're real good, we'll sell you the rights. Bye.
I didn't expect you two at Star Lab so quick.
Oh, we didn't either, Tim. But we had this tailwind.
A tailwind? Right. By the way, Captain Graydon, I feel I should tell you there's something out there by the sun.
Oh, really? What do you mean, Tim?
I have a theory about all this.
Theory? What theory? About what?
Well, I'm certain there's a planetoid out there next to the sun, drawing off energy.
A planetoid? You think it's alien?
Well, let me put it this way. It's not ours. We haven't been able to track it visually because of the glare from the sun's rays, so I can't prove my theory yet.
We'll keep an eye out, Tim. Thanks for the tip.
Right. So long, and good luck.
Thanks, Tim. Roger, Star Lab Control. T-minus 28 and counting.
Delta 1, telecom computer lock. 775 megahertz. Our Mycroft data transfer is online.
Channel 775 locked. Transfer's online. Check.
Star Lab Control, we're on the grid. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Delta One moves into the black depth of space. Captains Graydon and Griff set a course for a dying sun.
We're getting close. Is shielding operational?
It is now, Captain.
Delta One, this is Star Lab. We scope you at 214 degrees, bearing 030. We have visual radio telescope contact with you. MTI shows a planet-sized mass close to your present position. You are off course by 02.5 degrees. Have you visual contact?
Starlab. Starlab, this is Delta One. Do you receive? Over.
What the? Skipper?
What's happening, buddy? Where's our power?
The main rockets just went branchless. Flame out. We've lost our maneuvering power.
The radio's gone, too. Fire retros.
I am, Skipper. Nothing. They're like a plate of cold spaghetti.
We're being pulled off course. The compass has gone berserk.
What is happening?
Buddy, what the devil is that?
What? Where?
Look. Over here, through the infrared viewing screen, off the port side.
Where did that come from? It's huge. It's definitely not an asteroid.
No, it's too spherical.
Well, whatever it is, we're being pulled towards it.
Look at the size of that thing. I wonder if that's what Tim was babbling about. You don't suppose...
What, Captain?
Never mind.
That's the strangest looking thing I've ever seen. It's got to be some kind of a giant vehicle.
Like a planetoid, Captain?
I didn't really want to say it.
Yeah, I know. Well, hang on, Captain. We're on a collision course with it.
Dr. Cassidy, look! On the tracking screen, Delta One! It's gone!
What's happened to them?
They vanished! Right off the screen, the scopes, the radios, everything. They're gone. I knew it!
Keep trying to establish contact. We've got to locate them.
Hey, Captain. What happened? Who turned out the lights? Buddy, we're inside Tim's planetoid.
What?
Oh, man, I must have blacked out. Look, over there. An opening. That's where we must have come in. Hey, what's that? Something's outside the hatch door. I think we've got company.
I'm the Urns of Narasar the Markab.
I hope that's the name of the hotel.
Disembark your craft. You are under Markab control. Do not resist.
Guess you better do as he says, buddy. They look pretty gruesome.
Really?
Alien beings. We make contact with aliens.
I am Gargon of the Markab Confederacy.
Come with us!
I'm Captain John Graydon, ISA Terra. Where are you taking us? I always knew I should have taken foreign languages.
All right, don't get pushy. Get their claws off me. Boy, are you weird looking.
I know of no Markab Confederacy, at least in this galaxy.
Well, me neither, Chief.
Wow. This must be the lobby.
Commander Konar, we have intruders on Voltar. Intruders? By what reason do you come to Voltar?
Well, Doc, you see, we really didn't plan on it. You might say we sort of fell into it, you know what I mean?
Why do you approach Voltar Sunminers?
Sunminers? We're from Terra, Earth. We're not intruders. We're on an emergency mission. Our sun is dying.
Captain, we've just stumbled onto the reason.
I am Zar Konar, commander of the Markab Confederacy, fifth galaxy of Tremion. You are intruders.
Look, Commander Konar, we were pulled off our mission by you.
You have entered forbidden space. Markab space.
Markab space? What are you doing to our sun?
We collect and store great energy from many suns. Yours is not the first.
Yeah? Well, listen, you sun stealers. Earth can't survive without that energy.
Then you shall perish. We take suns in many galaxies. It must be so for Markab existence.
Hey, no way, you oversized tin termite. We're not gonna stand for this.
Buddy, no.
Don't.
Buddy, are you all right?
It's all right, Captain. Run for it. I'll handle these things.
Seize them.
Run for it, Skip. Get out of here.
Buddy, are you crazy?
Run, damn it. In here. I'll duck behind the skirter. Okay, now head down this corner. Through here. Oh, which ramp? That one, that's it. There's the ship. Oh, I could just manage to get there.
Shut up, Terran.
Oh, boy, too close for cover. Oh, all right, I made it. Oh, no. I sure hope that energy field is null. Come on, baby. Come on, fly, Delta One. Fire, damn it. All right, Delta One. Let's get the hell out of here. I'm moving. The force field is null. Good. Instruments show me clear. I'm through. I've made it. I can't believe it. Oh, no. Wait a minute. What's that pull? Oh, no. They've got a pressure beam on me. I've got to go FTL. Quick. Okay. I'm out of their orbit. Wait. Buddy, what about Buddy? I've got to get back. I've got to get help. I can't just leave him there. Starlab Control, this is Delta One. Come in, Starlab Control. Starlab, thank God. This is Delta One. I've been overtaken. We've been in contact with alien beings. The planetoid. Tim was right. It does exist. There are aliens.
John Graydon uses every faculty to blast free of the Markav aliens and return to Starlab.
Call themselves Markavs. Buddy's still inside. We've got to get him out.
Thoughts of what he just experienced race through his mind at laser speed. It is imperative to warn Starlab and Earth. The threat is no longer theory. It is reality. Graydon and Griff have made contact with alien worlds.
You're right, Dave. Grady was on Sanford and Son. Griff was on Married with Children.
Ah, okay. Yeah, there you go.
Griff worked in the store with Al, in the shoe store.
Okay.
And it was almost...
That's something we didn't see too often, but yeah, it was there.
Yep. Yeah. All right, but unlike Married with Children, we got some good sci-fi going on here.
We do.
It almost sounds like it was written more for the 50s to me, in a way, but yet presented in the 70s. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, you certainly had the technology, and actually interesting about the soundtrack on here, it was the musical score and theme entitled Aliens World Suite, was composed by Jim Kirk, engineered by Dick Luzzi, and was performed by the London Symphony Orchestra, comprising a 57-piece Westminster Sabrina in Wembley, England. And many of the realistic sound effects were recorded in four different sessions on an oil tanker in San Pedro dry dock.
Where one normally would have expected to do that.
Of course, yes. Of course we would all expect that.
Where else would you do it? I ask you.
Where else indeed?
Good sci-fi, and we here at Erie House are planning on landing on the sun, taking a, you know, getting Elon Musk to fly us off to the sun. We'll go at
night.
Yeah,
I think there are a lot of people. There would be a lot of people to pay for us to go there too, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, we won't get burned. Don't worry. We'll go at night.
Yep. Yep.
That's the certain ethnic.
Hey! Don't ruin my
astronaut.
Sun facts, Dave facts now. Don't ruin my sun facts, Dave facts.
Oh, okay. Well, instead of ruining them, we ought to get started with them since we didn't get to the last break. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think they need some sort of a musical or otherwise exciting intro.
Ooh, yes.
Dangerous.
I'm too scared to do it. Go ahead, intro.
Go on ahead.
All right.
Sun facts, Dave facts.
Sun fact. Many ancient cultures worship the sun as a deity. Dave fact. I'd worship it myself if it would come out more in January. Sun fact.
Amen.
Heliocosmology is the study of the interior of the sun. Dave fact. How do they study the sun? Do they go there by night? Sun fact. See, I warned you. The sun does not have any rings. Dave fact. But it does have several bracelets in the smartwatch. Sun fact. Different parts of the sun rotate at different speeds, the faster being at its equator. Day fact. Funny, my equator is the slowest moving part of my body, probably because of the numerous visits to Burger King. There we go. That's a set of sun facts. Day fact.
It was a good set of sun fact, Dave facts. Keeping it nice and sunny today, indoors.
Indoors, yeah.
Indoors.
in the basement. Yes.
Kind of a sad place right now, but that's okay. To keep us going, we've got more of the Sun Steelers. No, it's not a football team. It's the Sun Steelers. This will be part three for us, but this is now the next episode. Is that right, Dave?
This is the second episode, right? And this one actually would be coming to us from, oh, let me get back over here. It would come to us from January 14th of 1970 and 9.
High above Earth's windy skies, 1,000 miles in space, the Astronomical Space Observatory, Starlab, lazily drifts in orbit. Research teams aboard have detected strange solar activity on Earth's sun. Space exploration team John Graydon and Buddy Griff are sent to investigate and face a bizarre encounter.
We're being pulled off course. The compass has gone berserk. Buddy, what the devil is that? Where did that come from? It's huge. Whatever it is, we're being pulled towards it. Hang on, Skipper. We're on a collision course with it.
Delta One is mysteriously pulled aboard an alien planetoid.
I am Tsar Konar, commander of the Markov Confederacy, fifth galaxy of Tremion. You are intruders.
Buddy, are you all right? Run for it, Skip. I'll handle these things.
Resisting, Buddy Griff creates a diversion, allowing John Graydon to escape from the alien planetoid aboard the Delta One spaceship.
Starlab Control, this is Delta One. Come in, Starlab Control. The planetoid. Tim was right. It does exist. There are aliens. I've been overtaken.
John Graydon, shaken by the alien encounter, returns to Starlab in part two of The Sun Steelers on Alien Worlds.
He's here, Dr. Cassidy. They're bringing Captain Graydon in now.
Okay, Tim, come on.
It's pretty strange, isn't it?
What, Tim?
Well, haven't you heard? I mean, something went wrong. They were overtaken by aliens. Buddy didn't get out.
I've only gotten the preliminary report. I'm not sure about any aliens yet.
Hi, Mara. Tim.
Jerry. Where is he?
He's in the isolation airlock chamber.
How is he?
Doc Benson says he'll be all right. Radiation levels are minor, but there's enough present to leave him in the capsule for at least an hour. We need to run a couple more tests. You can talk to him on the intercom.
Good, Jerry. Tim, pull the Mycroft onboard computer tapes and begin decoding them. Better check over Delta One's flight recorders, too. Send all the information to the ISA.
All right.
John, thank God you're okay.
Mara. Mara, we're not alone out here. Buddy didn't make it out. He's inside an alien planetoid. It's draining the sun's energy.
Oh, take it easy, John. What's draining energy?
The Markabs.
What?
Oh, Mara, they're awful. Like insects. Tall. Very tall. I'd say maybe about 7 feet. Their bodies are black and shiny. Claw-like hands and large, radiating eyes.
Good Lord. Buddy, what about him? Is he...
But Buddy, the Buddy caused a diversion so I could escape. We've got to get back there and get him out.
Well, of course, John.
Dr. Cassidy, we have the ISA. We're feeding them to your televideo screen.
All right. I hope they've got a lead on all this.
We just got the report. It's unbelievable. How's Graydon doing?
He's here in quarantine, Commissioner White. Listen, I trust you've received the flight tapes by now?
Yes, Ma. We haven't come up with anything solid yet, though. We're still trying to analyze all the information. But I'm afraid the computers at Jadel Institute have given us a new prediction.
What are you talking about?
Well, Doctor, according to them, we have less than 9 hours before the sun reaches a point of non-recovery. There's really not enough time for us physically to analyze and return you all that data.
So what does that mean?
Well, I'm afraid you're on your own. It's up to your people at Star Lab to stop those aliens.
Their eyes turn instinctively toward a dimming ball of fire hanging in space. The sun is fading, dying, and with it, the future of Earth. The hopes of a planet ride upon their shoulders as they prepare an opposition against alien worlds. Alien Worlds continues. The life expectancy of Earth has been reduced to 9 hours as our sun fades into obscurity. Alien creatures revealed as the Markab Confederacy continue to drain our solar energy. Starlab Research Director Mara Cassidy, along with her assistant Tim and Space Exploration Captain John Graydon, are the only ones who can stop the Markabs, if indeed they can be stopped.
Oh, John. Well, come on in. Glad to see you out of quarantine.
That makes two of us, Mara.
How are you feeling?
Much better, thanks.
Good. Can you recreate for me just exactly what happened to you and Griff aboard Delta One?
Well, we were within the ecliptic range of the sun about 5 minutes out, and we were getting ready for our first photo scan pass.
Yes?
All of a sudden, our radios went dead. Instruments, everything. We completely lost all power.
Mm-hmm.
Then we spotted this incredible object about 5 kilometers in diameter, a metallic, black with a large disc on top.
And then?
We lost control of the ship, and we were drawn into the object. We took about 6 G's. Buddy blacked out. Next thing I knew, we were taken off the ship by the aliens that I told you about. They told us they were mining the sun's energy.
But how?
I don't know.
Oh, Tim. Good. You've got the Mycroft report? What's wrong? You're white as a sheet.
That thing out there is the cosmic wonder of all time.
Tell me about it.
What did you find?
Well, the Mycroft computer came through like Captain Video. Solar depth sensors, heat generation refractions, course deviations, wavelength correlations, video scan of the planetoid.
Tim, get to the bloody point. What did you find?
Basic theory of electromagnetic energy, Dr. Cassidy.
Electromagnetic energy?
Yes, that's right. The alien planetoid is an electromagnetic field extracting ultraviolet radiation through infrared oscillation.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, it means the Markabs are drawing ultraviolet light energy and converting it to a form of electricity.
That would explain the invisibility. The radiation creates a massive shield around them which blends with the sun's rays.
Exactly. That's why only the MPI picked it up originally on the infrared screens.
That's very interesting.
That's not all. The tractor beam that pulled you into the planetoid was also magnetically energized.
I see. Well, that would explain the compass going crazy just before we lost control.
Wait. That's it.
What?
We haven't got much time. Tim, get over to the hydro lab. Have them assemble a 50-megawatt portable CMG. We'll use the Michelson interferometer principle.
A countermagnetic generator, of course. A beam splitter. Oh, brilliant, Doctor. I'll meet you two in the briefing room in 20 minutes.
I think you two blew a capacitor in your brains. You've lost me. I'm just a space pilot.
And that's just exactly what we need you to be, John. It's a long shot, but it's the only one we've got. An 1880 theory that could put the Markabs right out of business. Come on. I'm going over to the lab. We need to get together Delta One. We're going into that planetoid. If this works, John, we may be able to turn the Markab energy field back on top of them. If I can figure out a way to deactivate the pressor beam. Do you think you can get us back in?
Yes. Yes, I'm sure of it. But we'll need some kind of an escort to create a diversion. I'll go up to Mission Control and recruit a few pilots from Stargazer One.
Okay. I'll meet you in briefing within half an hour.
As time continues to slip into the past, the future draws closer. They're designed to dethrone the Markab power. A tenuous betide to the indelible. Meanwhile, planetoid captive Buddy Griff remains a solitary man to an alien world.
Earthman intruder, your resistance to our way is useless.
You don't give us any choice, Konar. By our very nature, we're survivors. We must resist.
Ours is to destroy that which resists.
Why do you have to destroy everything? Don't you guys know how to create?
Our system of long ago was the victim of devastating destruction. We have long since created the power to never again be victims. It is the way of the Cord.
The Cord?
The rule of Markat supremacy in the universe. To destroy.
It sounds like a case of bad karma, Doc.
I do not understand.
I can't believe I've actually gone over your 7-foot head. Karma is the...
Take him away!
Hey, what are you doing?
You too shall be destroyed. We are the rulers of the light. Yours shall be the world of darkness.
Nah, you'll never get away with this, Konar. My people will be back.
All right. You fellas have been asked to fly this mission based on your experience as fighter pilots. Now, we've programmed D-28 missiles aboard your ships for a diversion ploy on the Markabs. Hopefully, the counter-orbital passes will cause enough confusion to allow us time to land Delta-1 inside. Now, if we're not out by the 20-minute limit, you're instructed to launch full Titan Heliotropus missiles into the side of the Markab planetoid, and then return to Starlab. Any questions? Okay. We'll launch in 8 minutes. Synchronized watches, 1600 hours, 22 minutes, and 15 seconds. Mark. See you guys on the 50-yard line.
As Starlab pilots prepare the final assault on the alien encounter, a galaxy clings to the hope of triumph on alien worlds.
Realize the whole galaxy is at risk here, but sure, why not?
Well, if the sun slows down and all the planets explode and or go into, you know, odd orbits and stuff, that would be a bit of a trouble for the Milky Way, at least.
You think? I don't know. We're kind of far from everybody. But who knows? Who knows?
Somebody not knows. I.
Carl Sagan knew.
Yeah, but he's not around to tell us anymore.
No. He's part of the cosmos now.
He is part of the cosmos.
Yes. And I mean that in a good way. The Sun Stealers. Quite a little story here from Alien Worlds. 1979. My gosh, we were 19 years old, Dave.
Yes, we were. And, wow. Yes. I can't think of anything else to say, but yes.
Here, I'll cheer you up some more. It was 44 years ago.
All right. Enough. I told you no math tonight.
All right. Well, I know. I hurt my head kind of doing that right there, but
yeah, that's okay. I'm telling you. Yeah.
We can cheer. Excuse me.
Well, before we come to the conclusion of this exciting episode, I guess what we could do is head into our next set of Sun Facts, Dave Facts.
Supposing I can find that same soundbite, or a better one.
Oh, okay.
Scrolling my behind off.
Yes, and GD Side Paper, you're right. That was old enough to drink the three beer. Yeah, 3-point beer. 3.0 beer.
3-point beer. We are survivors of 3-point beer. That's all right.
Yes, we are.
Well, let's go ahead and just jump right into it. Here, I'll put a nickel in Dave. I'll put a nickel in Dave, and he will give you Sun Facts, Dave Facts. There we go.
Wow. First time this show has paid off for me. Fun fact, it has enough nuclear fuel to say, to stay as it is for 5 billion more years. Dave fact, go ahead and disprove that. We'll wait. Fun fact, helium is the most abundant element both in the sun and in the universe, but very hard to find on Earth. Dave fact, maybe that's why it's so hard to buy a balloon at Dollar Tree. Fun fact, the cornea release stream of charged particles referred to as solar wind. Dave fact, and I thought that was just a political debate. And fun fact, the chromosphere contains spikes of gas called spicules. Dave fact, my uncle's spiculars also contain spikes of gas. Coincidence? I think not. That's it.
All right, after shoving a nickel in Dave, I don't want to see how he's going to make change. That's for sure.
Yeah!
But it'll probably sound something like that.
Dale, it did kind of get stuck in my throat, and I did have to wash it down with a beer. I call it the Heineken maneuver.
The Heineken remover.
With the...
The Heineken remover. Yep, 3-2 beer, GGSI paper. I remember that. You had the high stamp and the low stamp when you went to the clubs. I think a black-colored stamp meant you were over 21, and if you had a red one, you were over 18, but not yet 21, and therefore subjected to low beer.
Still better than near beer, so hey.
The horror. Well, yeah, near beer is like, why bother, you know? Why? Why does that product exist? It's absolutely pointless.
That's true. It's so true.
It's like
so
screen
true.
Doors on a submarine. Just why? Not going to work.
Yep. I can't. Well, I don't know. For those who think they want to drink beer but won't, you know?
That's right.
But they're for the Mormons, I think, it's for, you know?
Mate, there you go. So they can feel like they're doing something wrong, but they're really not. I don't know.
And then they'll still feel guilty about it.
Finally found a practical use for new beer. Good. There you go, Romney. Have fun
Absolutely.
With that.
Oh, my. Absolutely.
I think anybody likes him anymore. We got part 4 of Alien Worlds. Their ships don't need screen doors either. Here's the conclusion.
Alien Worlds continues. The Markab aliens must be stopped. Their effect on Earth's sun is tantamount to galactic devastation. Starlab mounts the final front as John, Tim, and Mara prepare to effect the aliens' demise.
T-minus 27 seconds and counting.
Okay, Captain, the device is on board.
Good. Mara, would you strap yourself in, please? Mission Control Delta 1, on the grid for 028, trajectory on 1775.
Captain John Graydon prepares the leading assault on the Markab Confederacy. Mara Cassidy and Tim ready themselves for the alien confrontation.
All right, Tim, let's go over the mechanics of the CMG beam splitter.
I have the timing device set for 18 minutes on the detonator. When it triggers, it'll pull every bit of energy within a radius of 5 kilometers into the magnet center. The energy overload will create a chain reaction. As the alien storage collector beam split, it'll blow them right out of the galaxy.
Good.
John, during the time the device triggers, we'll lose all magnetically operated instruments.
You mean I should be ready to fly Delta One by the seat of my pants, so to speak?
Hey, I like that. By the seat of my pants.
It's an old term used when flying airplanes without instruments, Tim.
You used to fly airplanes?
Oh, John's a pilot of many experiences, Tim, including pilot commander for the Jupiter 1 mission.
Really? Oh, gee, that must have been some flight.
Yeah, Maura remembers that one, don't you, Maura? She was our science officer, and a good one, too.
That was my introduction to the ISA, and the last time I saw my father alive.
Pardon me for asking, Doctor, but what happened to your father, on Altair, I mean?
My father was chief science officer for NASA. They were conducting neutron laser tests in zero gravity. He was setting up the guide path for the beam's target. Buddy Griff pre-detonated the laser's timing mechanism. My father was killed.
Maura. Maura, listen, it's time you knew. That's not really what happened. It wasn't Buddy's mistake.
What are you talking about? The report said...
I know all about the report. It was an accident, that's true. But your father miscalculated the laser's initial impact strength on the beam's path. The device was hot, overheated from testing all day. The heat triggered the premature detonation, not Buddy.
How do you know all this?
From Dr. Solomon, the project coordinator. He told me the whole story shortly after it happened. But he never said a word about it to anyone, including me.
But... wasn't in the report. Why?
Because Buddy wouldn't allow it in the report. Since your dad was a notable scientist, Buddy took full responsibility for his mistake to clear his record.
Why didn't Buddy tell me the truth?
It's a strange guy. Buddy's a rebel, but he's also guided by a strong sense of honor.
I see.
All right, if you two are ready, I've got to get our act together before our Markab madmen discover we're here.
Commander Konar, enemy ships are approaching Voltar. Enemy vessels? More intruders? Who are they? They are of undetermined origin, but they appear to have an Earthcraft configuration. Launch the Voltanians! Destroy them at once! Interceptors launched on enemy targets. Closing.
Captain, on the probe screen!
Good eye, Tim. The Markabs have obviously spotted us. This is Delta One leader to Strike Force. Okay, you guys. Looks like this is the 50-yard line. Execute ZK-15s now.
Got him, Captain. Got you covered. Now fly that rascal right down their throat. This is Firefly 2. On the lead. Okay, boys. Marines are here. Heading on 9-5. Roger.
Like you've got your diversion, Captain.
Right. And there's the planetoid.
Really is incredibly large.
Oh, my God.
Hang on. We're going down. Maura, I sure hope your rig nullifies that tractor beam.
Tim, program the key code.
5513, lock. Energize. Locked, Captain. We should be clear of any field wave.
Good. So much for part one. Now all we gotta do is find the right place to sit down. There. There's the opening.
Radar configurations check out. Here's the coordinates given on the open side. Mycroft's computations are correct.
I love you, Mycroft.
Not bad for an expensive adding machine.
Mycroft's a lot more than that, Captain.
Just kidding, Tim. Hang on. We're setting Delta One right in that pigeonhole. Let's get this over with.
Here, help me with the CMG. Okay. All right, you both have your communicators?
Yeah.
All right, Tim, you'll bring the CMG with me. Mora, you guard Delta One. And if you run into any trouble, you call us. You've got your Lasertron, right?
Right.
All right, don't be afraid to use it if you have to.
I'm ready, Captain.
We'll set up the jamming device. Then I'm going to try and find Buddy. Okay, Tim, let's go.
Good luck.
Good grief. Do they have to make this thing so heavy?
Oh, God, it's cold in here. Oh, this place is amazing. I've got to get some pictures of this interior.
It's back.
And the prisoner has escaped.
Where is he?
Somewhere in this quadrant. I'll look for him. Call the guards. Find the other Earthlings. Quick, the alarm.
Captain Clayton. Come in. John.
Yes, Mora.
They know we're here. I just saw two of them. They said something about an escaped prisoner.
That can only be Buddy.
What do you want me to do?
Check your locator. Make sure you don't get lost, and then go for it, Mara. Follow them. Be careful. If you find Buddy, call me.
Okay.
Earthman, so you think you can escape? You cannot hide from Garagon.
Oh, hey, hiya, Chief. Hide me? Nah. I was just giving you a little exercise, you know? It's sort of keeping you on your toes.
Your spacecraft has returned.
Returned? Delta One? What do you mean?
He means...
Hey, all right, lady. Pretty fair shooting. You're just in time. I was just in the middle of escaping. Where's John? You didn't fly here by yourself, did you?
Oh, no. He and Tim are down in the power collecting room. We brought a CMG to blow this place to kingdom come.
CMG. What's that? One of your toys?
It's a countermagnetic generator. We think it'll counteract the method the Markevs are using to draw energy from the sun.
Sweetheart, save it. Maybe later, over dinner perhaps?
Oh, that's right. We better get out of here.
And hopefully not any too soon. Now, quick, down this corridor.
How much longer, Tim?
It's just two more connections here. Hand me those leads.
Tim... You're shaking like a leaf.
Yeah, I know. I just hate working under this much pressure.
Well, now's a fine time to copy that one.
I'm okay. There. That's it.
I wonder where Mara is. I can't raise her on the communicator.
Should I set the timer now? We'll have 18 minutes, you know.
Yes, set it. You get back to Delta One, and I'll head back the other way. And then if
Captain,
I...
Captain, watch out!
Stop! Surrender!
I never knew you had it in you.
I can't believe I did that.
All right, set the timer. Let's get out of here.
Set.
There they are. Stop them.
Quick, Tim, this way.
John and Tim find themselves trapped by the Markev. The CMG timer has been set. Only precious moments remain before a deadly explosion.
Look! There's Buddy!
Hey, all right, John!
Buddy, thank God. Where's Mora?
Back at Delta One.
We've only got 2 minutes.
Hurry!
Get on board, Mora.
Okay, everyone. We're not out of this yet.
Buddy, fire Module 1.
Right, Skip. I'll take the rocket guns and hold them off.
Lift. We have main ignition. Clearing the planetoid.
Oh, yeah!
The
CMG detonation 15 seconds.
Telemetry 4 plus 4. Stand by to hit faster than light speed.
Check. FTL primary ignition.
10 seconds to detonation.
FTL main power. Now.
CMG detonation 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. There they go. It worked!
Of course it worked!
And so we bid farewell to the Goosamines as they and their planetoids sink slowly into the west and the east.
Together, a small group of people with tremendous courage and confidence have saved Earth from the threat of eternal darkness. The Markab sun miners have been destroyed soon enough to allow the sun's own energy to regain its mighty power. The heroism of Delta One's mission has relieved the galaxy from the peril of alien worlds. Alien Worlds was created, produced, and directed by Lee Hansen. Associate producer Jeff Allen. Our engineer was Stu Jacobs. Production coordinator Aaron O'Neill. Produced and distributed by Watermark Incorporated. Executive producer Tom Rounds.
Saved my night. The goat is quite soothing.
And you know, Dale, even though we had this wonderful hour story, we still can learn something from it.
I'll be done. Thought I wasn't going to be ready, huh? Erie House Radio proudly presents a Garless Moral of the Story.
It's apologies to Gar. Don't even think of stealing our sun. Either we will blow you out of the sky, or we'll yell the Texas Roadhouse birthday song at you until you wish you had been blown out of the sky. That's it.
Well. Well, so that I'm gonna.
Okay, hey, we have
refresh
one
my
more
screen just for that. I may need to.
All right, now wipe. Let's see. Next, we have one final set of Sun Facts, Dave Facts.
Ooh. Okay, a little. Music.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay. Sun fact. The sun is about 400 times larger than the moon. Day fact. Don't look at me. I told it to stay away from the all-you-can-eat buffet. Sun fact. The sun is 30,000 light years away from the center of the Milky Way. Day fact, yet it only takes me 4 bites to get to the middle of my Milky Way. Sun fact, a geomagnetic storm is a worldwide disturbance of the Earth's magnetic field as a result of solar activity. Day fact, and here I thought it meant my ex-wife was back in town. And sun fact, partial solar eclipses are dangerous to the naked eye. Day fact, however, the male eye is partial to the naked female body, which is also dangerous if your wife catches you looking at it. That's it!
Well, that was well received.
I think I stubbed my toe again. Okay.
That's right. And we still ain't done yet.
No.
Because
we've got a bit of a short Arch Obler play here, but Arch Obler Lights Out program to share with everyone yet.
Yes, the day the sun exploded. Now, wasn't there a movie by that name? Was there not a movie by that name?
I think there may have been. This is not the same thing, but yeah.
No, but it seems to me I recall something. Clearly not my own name.
Yeah, was that?
Clearly not my own name. I don't remember that.
I think it was just a quick look here. The sun exploded. Movie. There we go. Whoops.
Maybe it's the day the sky exploded. I'm thinking of.
Day the sky exploded. Yeah. That's right.
Well, there we go. Don't listen to me. I am in
1958. Yep.
You remember that before I was born.
Yeah. I remember that. I wasn't born yet. Yes.
That's right. We do that a lot.
We do that a lot. Yes, we do.
We do.
But that's what we specialize here in Erie House. Yep.
Yeah. Remembering things before we were born.
Yep.
We can do it if we try hard. The day the sun exploded, Lights Out. Originally broadcast when?
Originally broadcast on September 1st of 1945.
Whoops. Tripped over the cord.
I was weary of the alarms of war, exhausted by the everlasting bitterness between men. On that September day of 1945, I thought, would there ever be a true peace? A peace when walls between nations would fall, men would be in conflict only against poverty and illness, and the word unhappiness would be stricken forever from the human heart?
It started out as a wonderful day. All over the world, the weather was unbelievably perfect. Where it was daylight, it was the clearest, bluest daylight in the memory of mankind. Where it was night, the sky was cloudless, and the moon and the stars gave light, bright almost beyond belief.
And as all mankind shared the blessings of perfect weather, so also they shared a common, all-encompassing interest. For on this day, men of all nations grouped around their radios and televisors, watching and listening to an epical event which was taking place in the great council hall of Geneva.
Yes, epical indeed was this meeting, for in the great vaulted chamber sat 1,000 men of many tongues and many colors, of many temperaments, many ideologies, the chosen representatives of their nations, come together in council to meet and discuss a cause close to the heart of every man.
And as each representative rose and spoke, from Tokyo to Melbourne, from Cape Town to Moscow, from Santiago to Nome, the ears and the eyes and the hearts of all mankind were with them.
Black man, white man,
yellow man, brown man,
red man.
Listening and hoping.
Indo-European.
Arab and Berber.
Mongolian.
Malayan and Polynesian.
American Indian.
Dravidian.
African.
Australian and Papuan.
Hoping and listening.
Protestant,
Roman Catholic,
Jew and Mohammedan,
Confucian and Buddhist,
Orthodox Catholic,
Brahmin and heathen.
All of them listen and hoping.
The next speaker, Signor Arati. Citizens of the world, I salute.
salute you. In the name of my people, I salute you. This is a great day. This is a day when the strong heart is glad. This is a day when a strong heart is seen. For today, for the first time in the history of the world, all men become like a blood brother. My people have had wars because for too many years we have had a great dream. A dream to have again a great empire. Our empire. The empire of the Caesars. Now, finish. No more. Today my people said to all the people, you are our brothers. We join you forever.
Gentlemen of the world, as a representative of my government, I bring you most cordial greetings and felicitations. This is indeed an historical movement, this joining together of all the races of mankind for the common good. Great was the moment when the Magna Carta was signed, as great indeed were the moments when the various constitutions were signed. But I say to you that this, indeed, is the greatest of moments. This moment of submersion of nationalistic ambition for the international good. My country, for years, has fought many wars. Our ancestors thought some of them righteous. But we, of this more enlightened time, renounce this shame forever. And we thrust behind us forever the imperialistic ambitions which have cost us the blood of our youth for so many centuries. Yes, from this moment henceforward, we give our empire to the world.
Speaker! Attention, please! The next speaker, Prince Vasui!
Honorable friends, we are a small nation, yet our influence has been felt throughout the world. But this influence, unfortunately, has been aggressive. Today, I am happy to say, all that is ended. We renounce the error of our fathers. We renounce belief that our island is the seat of godliness, and we join in this great idea that all men are of God, and all men are one, and all men can live as one in brotherhood and happiness. Tansai.
And now, another representative of a great people, Monsieur Reynac.
Messieurs et dames, I speak for a nation. Many have said this is a momentous occasion, but perhaps to no nation is it a greater occasion than it is to mine, which for many centuries has sat behind great barriers repelling invaders of our sovereignty. But today we strike down these barriers with our own hands, and we throw wide our arms and say to you, we are your brothers. We, a nation of individualists, a nation that is known hatred, turns from individualism and hatred to solidarity and love with all mankind. In the name of my nation, I salute the fraternity of mankind.
The time grows short. A few words from the representative of a great democracy.
My friends, I stand here before you alone. And yet, I assure you, 120 million of my countrymen are with me here in spirit. For many years, our national policy has been to mind our own business and to keep our powder dry. That was an excellent policy when nations were at each other's throats. But today, I stand here to tell you that we have renounced this policy. We have renounced it because we have outgrown such beliefs, even as nations have outgrown the belief that the only manner in which to settle disputes is by force. As a mature people, we reach out beyond the oceans which surround us and say to all of you, we are as you. You are as we. We are as one. We join in this great international movement without fear, without reservation. United we stand, all of us, forever.
On this historic document, a closing word by the representative of another great people, Harold Gumbling.
Beaverschaft, brotherhood is a noble work. I now bring you this work as a representative of my people. For many years, my people have walked as one, perhaps bowed their head as one, regimented in the belief that we must work together, would believe together. Some of the things we have believed, I stand here to tell you, have been false. It has taken many years of leadership, but now we know they are false. There is in the blood no right of leadership. Leadership is not in the blood. It is in the heart and the minds. This day we turn our blood into the great bloodstream of all mankind. White, yellow, black, the blood is the same. Christian, Jew, or heathen, the blood is the same. All our brothers will today all stand together in peace forever! Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Peace forever!
Gentlemen!
Peace
gentlemen, if you please! Gentlemen! Attention, please! It's Rose Lake! Attention, please! We have been in session many days. All of us are weary and anxious, I am certain, to return to our native home. So now, let us, without further delay, turn to our final task, the happy one of ratifying this great international treaty, which forevermore removes all barriers between nations, which makes of us the United Nations of the world, joined together for all eternity in common brotherhood, in everlasting peace. Our vote will be by acclamation. All those in favor of this great covenant will rise.
And that was the day the sun exploded.
My thanks and yours to Ingrid Bergman, B. Benaderet, Jimmy Cagney, Betty Davis, Olivia de Havilland, Catherine Hepburn, Elliot Lewis, Raymond Massey, Mercedes McCambridge, Paul Muni, Lloyd Nolan, Alfred Ryder, Norma Shearer, Jimmy Stewart, and to the many, many other actors, and to Marty Halpern and the scores of other technicians who made these records possible. A low bow to the musical Gordon Jenkins. In saying goodbye to you, may I give you one last thought. It is this. For the sake of our children and the world's children, remember.
There you go. That's a good one from the Lights Out. Short, yep. But with a big punch at the end with the little personal message, too.
Right. And, of course, that was that last message was recorded many years later, probably not long before he passed, because you could hear just by his voice, the age in his voice. But this story also left us with a message to learn from, Dale.
Indeed it has, and we'll be hearing that message shortly. Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
Yes, apologies to Gar. This story teaches us that world peace provides nothing but our own destruction. That's it. Fight.
Now that wasn't fight, so fight. Bad, was it?
It was disgusting.
It was. It was more than that.
Oh. Yes, it was all about dream.
It was. Wow, all that. Disgusting anime. And to be even worse, it could be a disgusting bad dream. A disgusting bad dream.
Most bad dreams can be considered disgusting. Good thing CW isn't here to kick me back into shape.
Yeah. She'll make up for it tomorrow.
I'm
well,
sure
we got
of
some
it.
Bonus time left here, Dale.
That we do.
Quite a bit.
Wow, lots of bonus time.
Yeah.
We can do part of tomorrow. No. Let's let's give you a nice wheel. I'm gonna spin the wheel here once.
You spin that wheel, Dale. Spin.
I'm gonna spin that wheel, old radio, because we got a whole lot of time and a whole lot of radio.
Around around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows.
Seaweed. Go to sleep, don't you?
I'm so sorry I came on this trip. I could cry. Why did you make me go?
I made you go. You were the one who didn't want to offend your cousin Eunice. I thought you said she was wealthy, Blanche.
She is. She's heir to her father's steamship line.
She's a hostess on a live bait boat. Fine honeymoon cruise on a fishing scow.
I still say it was nice of her to invite us.
What do you mean, invite us? They're charging us $4 a couple.
to bring our own wine.
Well, it was a beautiful wedding, and Eunice looked lovely.
Lovely. First time I ever saw a bride with a crew haircut.
Wonder you saw anything, the way you strapped yourself to the bar. Don't worry. I saw you with that bunch of no-good friends of yours making fun of the ceremony. You and your jokes about matrimony.
Oh, put out my life.
You're a fine one to talk about matrimony. You don't even know the meaning of the word.
It's not a word. It's a sentence.
Too bad about you. I suppose you told those roughnecks I forced you into this marriage. Did I ever run after you?
Blanche, I want to sleep.
Answer me. Didn't you hang around my house night after night bringing flowers and candy and heaven only knows what? Did I ever run after you?
Listen, a mousetrap doesn't run after a mouse, but a cat will just the same.
How can you say such terrible things? I did everything I could to discourage you, and you know it. Did I accept you the first time you proposed?
No.
Why not?
Because you weren't there.
I knew it. There's somebody else.
Oh, Blanche, there's nobody else.
I've been a trusting fool all these years. You stopped loving me the day you married me.
That wasn't the day at all.
What?
I mean, I never... Good night.
Then it's true you don't love me.
Blanche, I love you. What do you want from me?
Well, why do you scream so? Why can't you tell me you love me nice and quiet? Go on. Say it.
I love you nice and quiet. Satisfied?
No, I'm not.
Listen, do I ever ask you to tell me you love me? Do I?
Well, maybe things would be a lot better if you did. Why don't you ask me just once in a while?
All right. Do you love me?
No. That'll teach you not to take so much for granted.
Blanche, will you settle down so we both can get a little sleep?
I don't see how you can sleep at all on this thing, the way it pitches and tosses.
I can sleep fine if you'll only let me.
Well, I won't let you unless you promise not to snore anymore.
Oh, Blanche, can I help it if I snore?
Yes, you can. Dr. Hersey says you snore because you have a long uvula and it flutters against your palate.
What else the lights?
He says he can cure it in his office with a very simple operation. Why don't you let him fix it?
I'll let him fix it when we get home.
You say it, but you won't do it. Do it now.
What?
Go on. Get up and let Dr. Hersey pull out your uvula.
Are you out of your mind, Blanche? In the first place, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. In the second place, we're in the middle of the ocean. And in the third place, I'm not going to let that medical thief hack on my uvula.
He doesn't hack, he snares.
I don't care if he knocks it off with a hockey stick. Nobody is going to lay a hand on my uvula. I'll put out the lights.
In a minute.
Blanche, what are you doing?
I have to get ready for bed, don't I?
You've been in bed for 3 hours. Every night you cream your elbows, spray your chin, roll your neck. Just when I try to get some sleep. Put out the lights.
I haven't finished my face yet.
Your face is finished.
No, it isn't. I have to let this grease pack set for 10 minutes, otherwise it has no effect.
Grease pack?
It's guaranteed to make you beautiful in 5 treatments. And this is my 4th.
It is, huh?
Yes.
Boy, that 5th treatment must be a pip.
Too bad about you, John Dickerson. Maybe your other girlfriends don't have to use face cream.
I had to open my big mouth.
What a fool I am. I go through torture to look good for you, and you reward me with insult.
What torture?
I just wish you had to spend a whole day on a permanent wave machine or have your eyebrows done.
Why do you have to wave your eyebrows?
I don't wave my eyebrows. I have them plucked.
What for?
Because it sets off my eyes and improves the lines of my face.
Your eyes are offset enough and you got plenty of lines in your face. You don't have to pluck your eyebrows for me.
Yes, I do.
You do not. I like them the way they are, nice and bushy.
That's a left-handed compliment if I ever heard one.
Well, I'm left-handed. Throw away that stuff and let me get some sleep.
I notice you never complain about Gloria Gooseby's makeup.
No, now don't start with Gloria Gooseby.
She has to struggle out of 12 pounds of cosmetics before you can even get close to her.
I always get close to her and she never struggles.
What?
See, I hate the sight of Gloria Gooseby and you know it.
Then why do you always stare at her?
I never stare at her.
Not much. You made an absolute fool of yourself the way you followed her around to the wedding tonight.
It was that crazy dress she was wearing. A strapless thing with the 2 big buttons on it.
What buttons? Those were your eyes. Now, I'll bet I can have 10 men tagging after me if I can afford the clothes she wears.
Your clothes are better than hers.
That's what you say.
If you want to know something, the dress she wore tonight had a big rip in it.
Oh, you were seeing things.
Yeah, but she wore it just the same. How much longer are you going to be, Blanche? I must get a few minutes sleep.
I'm finished now. Good night, John.
Good night.
Wouldn't hurt you to kiss me goodnight, you know.
It hurts.
Funny how 8 years of marriage can change a man. Before we were married, you'd stand in my living room every night and pucker your lips the minute I came in. Why don't you do it now, John?
Because I'm too pooped to pucker. Can't you stop yapping for 1 minute, Blanche?
Well, I have to talk about something or I'll go out of my mind. Why does this thing rock so much?
I don't know.
I'm getting scared, John. When are we supposed to land?
Yesterday afternoon. I'll be surprised if we get there at all.
But suppose the boat sinks, John.
Oh, it won't sink.
Well, suppose it does.
Then it'll sink.
Well, I can't swim. Will you save me?
Yes, I'll save you.
Why?
Look, Blanche, I got a terrible neuritis in my legs. All I want to do is lie quietly so it doesn't pain too much.
Who told you to get neuritis?
Nobody told me to get neuritis.
Serves you right for catching fish in your shorts.
I didn't catch fish in my shorts. I used a rod. And if you just...
What was that, John?
I guess it was a wave. Must be a pretty rough sea.
John?
Hmm?
I don't feel so good.
Lie still.
Will you tell me what to do if I get seasick?
It won't be necessary. You'll do it.
It's awfully close in here, John. And this is the most uncomfortable thing I ever slept in. Are you comfortable? Why don't you change with me?
Oh, please, Blanche. I purposely sacrificed my own comfort just so you wouldn't squawk. I took this bed with only one mattress. I gave you my pillow. What more do you want?
I want to change. I'm not comfortable.
You are, too. There's nothing in the world more comfortable than a hammock.
It swings too much. I keep rolling back and forth.
Well, tie your feet to the wall.
There isn't even any room to turn over. Why did you have to put your fishing tackle up here?
It won't fit on the floor.
I don't see why I should have to sleep with a 55-pound halibut.
Couldn't get it off of the hook, and you know it. Besides, it isn't a halibut. It's a white sea bass.
I don't care if it's a mackerel. I'm not going to have it in my hammock. It bothers me.
It can't bother you. It's been dead for 11 hours. Turn the fish over on his side and go to sleep.
No, you change places with me.
Blanche, you're just being contrary. You know as well as I do it's more restful than a hammock. There's more air. And it's 10 times as good as this bed. You'll only suffer down here.
I don't mind suffering.
Well, I do. I'm not going to get up there.
And throw this fish out. What are you saving it for?
I told you I want to take it home and stuff it. Now settle down and go to sleep.
No, you're going to change places with me or I'll keep talking all night.
Okay, that's a change.
Well, help me down.
Come on. All right. So now you got the bed. How do you climb into this darn thing? Won't stop swinging. They can't get my other leg in. Blanche, look out!
John, are you hurt? Your face is all cold and clammy. Hey, your mouth is cut from ear to ear. John, speak to me.
I'm up here. That's a sea bass.
Why do you stare me like that? Get this fish out of my bed.
He's used to you, Blanche. Leave him alone.
John? I gotta have some water, quick.
What's the matter with you?
I'm getting squeamish again. Poor John, I need air.
She needs water. She needs air. You want me to check your oil, too?
Don't be funny. I can hardly breathe.
Well, reach up and open the porthole.
Porthole? What porthole?
That little round thing with the iron handle.
Is that a porthole? I thought it was a wall safe.
Well, I hope you didn't put any valuables in it.
No, just those 8 bottles of liniment.
Liniment? Blanche, those bottles were full of bourbon. You threw them in the ocean. Oh, why did you do that?
It serves you right for trying to camouflage the stuff.
I wondered why that school of sardines was chasing that shark. My bourbon. Oh, no, I'm really sick.
Somebody's at the door. Open it, John.
That's the last straw, sick as I am. I'm coming, I'm coming, I'm coming. No!
What happened?
I forgot I was in the hammock. What do you want?
You better hurry and get dressed, mister.
What for?
There's a big run of barracuda off the port bow.
Well, let them run. I'm not fishing anymore.
Well, most of the passengers are up on deck and they use up all my squid.
Would you let us cut up your sea bass for bait?
Go ahead and take it. There it is on the bunk. It's the one without the nightgown.
Thanks a lot. If you want breakfast, you'll have to come and get it now. There won't be any more food served till we get it. Sure.
Oh, go away.
What a...
Threw away $35 on a wedding gift. I'm losing 2 days' pay. I'm sick as a dog. And you won't let me sleep. Only one thing to do.
John, where are you going with that fishing rod?
I'm going fishing.
At 4 o'clock in the morning, you're going fishing for barracudas?
Barracuda nothing. I'm going to try and catch my bourbon. Good night, Blanche.
Oh, man, you can't hide the bourbon. You just can't hide the bourbon. That's just not right.
No.
A little fun with the Bickersons.
Yes.
And we
have fun with the Bickersons there.
Still got time before we get into talking about tomorrow and upcoming events.
We do.
Yep.
We do. Shall I give my nickel back and throw it in the jukebox?
You better wash it first, but yeah.
Don't worry, I washed it with beer, remember?
Oh, that's right. Beer cleans everything.
All right, here it goes. Just as I put it in the slot here.
And now, slap me down, chillin', if it isn't America's number one song, it's called... let's go deep into the heart of Texas with Dorothy, Trudy, Julie, Harry, Jack, Max, Sully, Ishka, Bibble, and the whole gang.
Stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas.
rock-a-doodle-doo, bless my old hen. Our old red hen was on her nest, tried to sleep but couldn't rest. The rooster got home baggy-eyed, and our old hen stood up and cried. I ain't gonna take it, set me down. The town. I ain't gonna take it, settin' down. She says, don't say you've been alone. Them ain't my feathers in your comb. If you don't have an alibi, you're gonna see some feathers fly. I've heard it said while on the loose, you made the spots with Clara Goose. From all reports of how it looked, you tell that goose her goose is cooked. I ain't gonna take it, settin' down. White and brown, you're out there scratching around the town. I ain't gonna take it, settin' down. She said, if I weren't such a stoop, I'd have a mink line chicken coop. Why, everything I owned in Hawkeye should have wed that Plymouth Rock. You know, one night while you were out, I met a movie talent scout. He loves my walk, he loves my cluck. He's starring me with Donald Duck. I ain't gonna take it, settin' down. You laugh, you just can't fool your better half. Mark my words, you'll see the day when your old hen will up and say, I ain't gonna take it, settin' down. I ain't gonna take it, settin' down. You needn't hang around and plead, stop handing me that chicken feed. I ain't gonna take it, settin' down.
Haven't had this one in a while, Dave.
No, we haven't. And now I'm hearing that beat all of a sudden.
Yeah, I needed something to pick me up after a rough day. Yeah.
And we had Deep in the Heart of Texas with Kay Kaiser in The Chicken Song from Di Lombardo. And now we got to hear the beat because we got to.
Yeah, by Animal Jack.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's my hero.
I love Animal Jack.
Well, we certainly had an evening of science fiction. We get that every so often, and certainly it's been a full night of science fiction tonight, Dale.
One of my favorite genres up there with horror and fantasy, which is what we specialize in here. We vary once in a while. We'll get you some comedy,
yeah,
some westerns, and some others. But we're back on track with the sci-fi this weekend with our Tales from the Sun.
Yep. We even got some more tales tomorrow, don't we?
My gosh, we do. Two of them, in fact. Oh, check this out. A good guest star. Not a guest star, but a guest on, or a star in the program from Seeing Ear Theater, Mark Hamill, Into the Sun.
Yep.
And then we go way back to Dimension X. So there you go.
Yeah, I went to Dimension X. It was over modulated, so I did have to go to the X minus one version. I'm sorry, but we have X minus one with
the
same
take
story.
X minus one.
Yes. So yes, it's a wonderful story, and we're still dealing with that sun in our eyes, right?
Yeah. And having to hear the beat.
And having to hear the beat.
We have to hear it.
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go. Whew. I thought he'd never run out of gas.
That's what I thought last night after Taco Bell. But I did.
Oh, I did. My goodness. Oh, my word.
Oh.
Yeah, what's that? A little.
Oh, shoot.
Taco pain there?
A little taco pain, yeah. You know, yeah. I'm sure it wasn't the taco, the spicy taco and the spicy beef burrito and that gordita that I had, you know, I'm sure it wasn't that. I think it was that water that I had with it. You know, I think that's what caused it.
Water. Yeah. You can't ever do it, Dave. You can't.
I'm telling you, it's dangerous stuff.
I know. I'm living dangerously. I have a water next to me right now.
I'm living safer today. I have my trusty dusty Diet Mountain Dew with me.
Ah. Yeah, I'm laying off the sodas for the evening. Because I do love a good soda, be it a root beer or a Diet Orange or Diet Moon Mist.
There you go.
All cherry. When you can find it.
When you can find it, that's
and after
that
taking
is
a third
the,
mortgage on your house, you can you can get.
Yep.
Tomorrow.
So we look forward to that. But it's not just us tomorrow.
If things go well, our partner Gar the Ghoul, you know, he will be doing Horrible Horror. Starring Gar the Ghoul. If not, I'm sure he'll put up a rerun like he usually does.
It's called a classic episode, sir. It's not a rerun, it's a classic episode. A classic episode. Exactly.
I stand corrected.
Well, you should sit down. It's easier that way.
It's a long night. I was thinking I should sit corrected. Weird. Now you've made me squirm in my chair, and that does not paint a pretty picture either.
Must be that last set of Sun Facts Dave facts that caused that. So.
Well, that's possible. Maybe we'll get some more sun someday here in Ohio. If it's not sunny outside, we hope it's sunny inside.
Yep.
When you listen to Erie House, Oldie Timey Radio.
Yep. And we're wrapping up our latest episode, episode 107 of The Weirdest Really Bad Movie. And really fun hosting bits. George Zucco played his evil twin in Dead Men Walk. And so Holly and I not only play ourselves, but also our evil twins at the same time. So
Yikes. They had to
indeed.
Hire stunt doubles. I got a preview of it. They had to hire stunt doubles. Amazing.
So,
Dave, I don't know how you did that. I mean, where did you find people that look exactly like the two of you?
Well, you know, it was tough for Holly. Me, I just had to go to the morgue, you know. But
the morgue.
It was tough for Holly, you know.
Good one.
There we go. Yes. Oh my. Well, I do look forward to tomorrow night and bringing in Mark Hamill for an episode of the Scene Era Theater. And one more time, bringing in the X-1 episode. So much fun. So much fun, or as Dave Letterman say, more fun than humans should be allowed to have.
Thank you, GGSI Paper, Fogsbane, good old Bob, and everybody else. Bye-bye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me. And him.
I'm here too.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Can you dig it?
You bet. I got my shovel.
Somebody slammed the door on the goat.
Yeah, wow. Well, that's why he screams. That's why he's always screaming.
Ah.
Oh, my.
Sorry, I have been chain smoking all day.
Yeah, well, that's understandable. But
not
you know
really.
What? Those chains are awful hard on your teeth, Dale.
Ooh, you have no idea.
Really tough on your teeth. You know,
this tobacco hobby is getting old.
Yeah, and guess what? I just found a new set. I don't think I plugged it in yet. I'll check to make sure. New set of science fiction stories about how the world keeps getting smaller, Dale.
Ooh, it does.
Yep, it
does. I don't know how good that is.
We'll have a suspense, an X-1, a lights out, and a Sears Radio Theater.
Ah, haven't had that in a while.
We have not, but we will have it again when I get us in there, and eventually floats its way top to the schedule there.
Hmm. There's a bunch of goodies coming up.
Yes, we do.
I'm kind of looking ahead right now. Good stuff. Superman will be coming back sometime.
Yeah, that's coming up here in a whole 6-parter? 7-parter?
8-parter.
8-part.
2 days. Eight-parter. That's a whole weekend, ain't it?
A whole weekend of Superman.
Ooh. Superman is special to me and Dave.
Oh, yes. Very, very, really unique, fond memories of not only the display, but the events that took place after that as well.
That's amazing what they had displayed at that library.
It is. And the 3D. The 3D issue number one that you could flip pages just by flipping your hand over it. I mean, wow.
It was basically a virtual comic book.
Yes. Yeah. It was really cool. And the bedroom all made up in all Superman stuff from the bed sheet to the trash can, to the record player, to everything. Had to do with Superman was in that bedroom.
Wow. A friend of mine who's a collector of cool things sent me this link of, and it was this news story about this guy. Okay. somewhere up in Michigan. His father, who was an attorney, passed away. He was kind of a quirky guy. As it turned out, he was like a closet hoarder. And he had an amazing collection of comic books, trading cards, like just incredible, and multiple copies of stuff, too. Years and years worth, including Superman number one, not Action Comics number one, which is the real home run. But still, Superman number one, and it has the third highest grade in terms of condition. Of the known copies of Superman number one.
Wow.
With his own title. That was just one of a mountain. I mean, they were showing video. So what it appears based on the news story I saw is that he is going like to conventions and probably liquidating this stuff slowly. It sounds like he's having a lot of fun meeting convention people doing it. People that really like the comic books, you know. But he had some of the classic early Marvels that I always admired as a kid that are, like, worth incredible money now. And this guy had multiple copies of some stuff. And it looked like the guy had – he was in touch with the market or whatever. You know, I remember doing stuff like that, collecting when something would come out. Oh, I'm going to go buy 5 copies of each one of these.
You know what I mean? Before I had a lot of obligations and I had a good, I was always working at something, you know, had a job.
Yep.
So I had money for cool stuff.
And conventions sometimes are cool. You really get to meet people that are interested in and things that are going on and sometimes what you're doing and things like that. And just really, really cool.
Sometimes you can even, if you're lucky, you can make a nice trade. What I like about a nice trade is you're helping someone with their collection while they're helping you with your collection. You know?
Yeah.
So that's always kind of cool. They usually have a lot of people, too. They'll go to a convention or whatever to sell stuff, and they end up buying a...
Yeah, yeah.
Buying a lot of other cool things. But...
Yeah, that's fun.
It'd be fun, but you got to travel a lot, I think, to make.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you're a massive venue. Like HorrorHound, that's a big to do.
It's pretty big, but you still got to keep rolling, you know?
Yeah.
That's why I think why Kevin Scarpino's always on the move. Going to all those things because that's, you know, like you said, at my age, how am I going to reinvent myself? So he goes to a lot of these convention places and he talks a little bit to help hopefully get some free space and sells his stuff and DVDs, all kinds of DVDs and stuff. And
sure,
and
keeps
how he
his little deal going. Himself. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. There you go. Not a bad way to go.
Yeah.
I like I like cool stuff. I like going to old barn auctions and stuff like that. I don't get a chance to very often, but sometimes people have the most amazing stuff. Surprising things.
You know, when the American Pickers went to Mike Mace's place, They found stuff he didn't even realize was there, including some old comic books that were up in the attic, and he didn't remember as being, they weren't his. He didn't remember them as being his dad's. He thought they might have been his uncle's, you know?
Huh. Wow.
But they picked right up on those, and what else? Just different things that they found in different places sometimes that Mike didn't even realize was there, so.
Wow. Yep. And Mike is surprised me when I first got to know how much he was into comic books, you know, as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Having met Stan Lee and other things.
Yeah, he wanted to be a comic book illustrator, you know, is what he wanted to do. He's got some art ability. That never crossed my mind when I look at my stick people I make.
I used to draw a bit when I was young. But
yeah, I did too.
It's not something I
luckily
wanted to do for a living. I did it more for fun.
I tried my hand at a few different comic strips, and most successful one I did was The Adventures of Super Mutt and Captain Weird. And it was our two superheroes, and Tim McFadden and I wrote that in high school. And what it is we'd have these a sheet made with all these empty frames. And then like we would sit down in the library or study hall together and kick off an idea. Then the one that had the most free time would take the sheet with him and he'd fill in three boxes. Then we'd patch each other in the hall and hand it off the other one. And the other one would fill three
That's
boxes
hilarious.
Back and forth like that until we had a completed comic. Cause we got to a point that, okay, we got to end this now. And we did, you know, it was a really cool time.
It's genius, though, the way to get it done.
That's right, slough it off. And we would leave, because I would draw Super Mutt, and he would draw Captain Weird, and whoever had it would draw the background and his own character and leave spot for the other character. And that's how we would do it.
Super Mutt.
Super Mutt and Captain
like
Weird, yeah.
Quite the duo. Were they like crime fighting heroes?
They were, yes. Let me see. They They fought Fred the Bionic Chicken. They fought the Watermelon Monster. Then there was a Return of the Watermelon Monsters. And then there's met Zodgilla. I'm trying to think what other episodes we had. So they were superheroes. They weren't crime fighters. They were superheroes.
That's brilliant stuff.
And they were fun. They were fun. I still have one or two of them. I even digitized one. Showed it to James Travers, our animator.
Yeah.
He said, you know, one time when they're in there, they're going to disturb RU-12. He's busy watching his favorite cartoon from the past, The Adventures of Super Mutt and Captain Weird. You know, have a short clip of Super Mutt and Captain Weird on the screen.
Awesome.
I thought that would be so cool.
A guest appearance.
That'd be cool.
What do they call that? A cameo.
A cameo, yeah, yeah.
There you go. It's a cameo.
So
it's a beautiful thing.
But so much fun to look forward to, and Eerie House and some of the other projects will just keep me rolling all the way and keep me awake all the time.
Yeah. Well,
yep.
Maybe it's time to drag out the schnozola.
That sounds like a good idea. So the stage people, put off the house lights, put on the three spotlights. So into the middle, Jimmy Durante can step and to sing us.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Good night, ghost.
Uh-oh, Pickle fell down again.
We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Good night, Mother Simpson.
We are evil, aren't we the same? And ink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink-a-tink.
Good night.
Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash.
Wherever. Ah, I
do you mind turning off the radio?